Hey, this is Travis Perry here, Travis's Big Idea Podcast, Volume 2. And I want to talk today a little bit about the comparison between two movies, Gran Torino and Frozen. But I want to talk about it in the context of some things I've said before on a site called Speculative Faith. On Speculative Faith, I've talked about the influence that Satan has in our culture, that Satan can, in fact, influence people to do wrong and works to insert negative messages into the kind of things we consume in terms of entertainment. Now, the problem with talking about that kind of thing is it immediately sounds really paranoid to some people that, what am I talking about? Am I out of my mind, you know, talking about Satan? And part of that is because a lot of people have a very strong reaction, not unsurprisingly, to the idea of Satan being involved in this world. And they think that if that's true, you know, if Satan's in something, we can't touch it, we can't have it, we can't look at it. But what I'm suggesting is, in fact, something quite different, that it's really quite common for there to be an influence of Satan or an influence of evil, or perhaps we should call it negative influences in the world. They're not unusual, they're not uncommon, and we just need to acknowledge that and look at it. And I want to give some examples here, examples based on a couple of these movies. But I want to say something first about G-rated films. Are G-rated films inherently better than R-rated films? And I would say, you can probably tell by the way I'm framing this question, is that they're not better. But why? But I do nonetheless like G-rated films a lot of times. Why? Well, because there's certain things in R-rated films that can be problematic or can cause trouble. I mean, one of the most prominent examples is profanity. And I think we have to be honest about ourselves as to what kind of culture we live in. We live in a culture that we went through a series of, well, it's, a lot of times it's comedians that led the way, but it wasn't just comedians, it was movies, it was entertainment, to a certain degree, television. But at one time, there was a certain set of words that most people did not say, and they've become increasingly common in our culture, in part because comedians use them for shock value to try to get laughs, and it worked to a certain degree. But it wound up being that more and more people picked up these words. So certain words are really common in our culture today. Now, the sound of a word itself doesn't necessarily mark it being dirty. It's not intrinsically worse, you know, to have a certain sound. But words are more than just their sounds. Words are what they mean and the associations with them. And why should we, as Christians, be part of or take place in a culture that randomly accepts the worst possible way to say something when there's nice ways and good ways or obscure ways? You know, I mean, there's lots of ways to talk about human waste, for example, right? Lots of ways we can talk about dung, we can talk about excrement, but there's a couple ways you can say it that qualify as shocking or more shocking. Why should we pick the most shocking option on the list, right? For me, that's like an evident thing that we should avoid this. Our mouths belong to Christ, and I don't want to pick up the habit of using that kind of language all the time. Yeah, there's people that say that it doesn't really mean anything. The meaning of the words have changed and our culture has changed, that we don't have to worry about that so much. I'm not saying that I worry about that, but I just don't want it to be a habit. If I have a choice between something that has clean language and something that doesn't, that covers the same kind of topic, I'm going to prefer the part that has the clean language rather than the other. But I do like stories that deal with real, I would call them adult problems, with suffering and hardship, with death. And sometimes stories that deal with those things include profanity. So sometimes I accept profanity. I might watch a show with profanity, even though I don't approve of it, because it has other virtues, right? Especially in portrayal at times of real situations. You might find somebody using language. Though there are people that think that, hey, of course, any real person in a real situation is going to use foul language. But I can tell you that I'm a veteran of war. I've been to war in Iraq, and I just generally didn't swear. I don't mean to say nothing ever slipped out. Sometimes it did. But in particular, I remember during rocket attacks when we were being attacked and things were blowing up, I used a word, you know, that references excrement, that, you know, starts with an SH and ends with a T. Why did I don't normally use that word? But the fact that I did under those circumstances, yeah, that kind of thing happens sometimes. But, I mean, I saved it for something big, and I didn't use some other words that people use quite often. So I'm not trying to make an excuse about what happened. I'm just explaining this is what went on. So I'm not in the military as well. I spent a lot of time with people that use profanity quite a bit, and so I could not afford to be shocked by it. I couldn't afford to lose sight of the fact that some people just say it habitually and it doesn't really mean anything, even though we can say in our culture overall the origin of the use of profanity is because of people trying to be shocking. I think that's where it comes from. And of course, every time there's some person like me who won't use profanity in a way that lends power to people who want to be shocking, because it still isn't normal to use the F word in regular broadcasts because there are still people who don't accept it. So all those people that use it for emphasis, you know, you're welcome. I'm helping you make that word more powerful than it otherwise would be. You know, I just think even if that word eliminated and some other words are eliminated, people would find other things to say. In fact, that is happening to a degree with racial slurs are more profane now than they used to be in the past. But comedians are still racial slurs. So I don't really think that we're progressing here. I think that we still are in a culture that goes as profane as it can many times. And I don't think that we Christians should participate. So in general, I'm in favor of no profanity, clean fiction in that way. All right, well, what about other things that are clean? How about nudity? Well, how do I feel about nudity? Well, I feel that it's a problem for me. I mean, I can't see an undressed female who's healthy, you know, without feeling some level of attraction. I think that's actually pretty normal in the world. I think it's pretty normal, especially for men, but I think there are women that are visually attracted to nude people as well. It doesn't make it okay. It's just the opposite of what I'm trying to say. So for that reason, because it's a problem, I don't want to see it. Now, I know that nudity is sometimes realistic in a story, like, you know, in Schindler's List is necessary to show people getting stripped down before being sent into a gas chamber. Actually, I don't remember if that scene, a scene like that specifically is in Schindler's List, but I know it does apply. But you don't have to play up the sensational aspects. It's not necessary. I think nudity is mostly not necessary in stories, and I'm mostly against it, though I can understand there are certain circumstances you might want to use it. But even if you're portraying a seduction, you don't have to show all the things that would be involved with it. There's more than one way to do things. Now, another thing that frequently gives a movie or a television show a tough rating, violence. How do I feel about violence? Well, I think violence, first of all, it's part of the real world, like the other things are too, profanity and sex. But one of the things about violence, me personally, I don't find it attractive. I find it repulsive. I don't like to see people get blown up, neither in reality nor in fiction. In fact, that's one of my concerns about violence, is if you show too much of it, people get used to it. They get exposed to it. They don't see it as what it is, which is awful. But some violence in movies, like, say, the Omaha Beach scene in Saving Private Ryan, have the effect they should have. They're horrific. They get your attention. They let you know the stakes have been raised in the story. And so I think there are times that violent scenes have a place in movies. I certainly accept them a lot of times. And certainly there are movies that I like that contain violence. But it's obviously not necessary all the time. And there are movies that shouldn't be that way. Clearly not. And there are times you can be more subtle about use of violence. You don't have to show everything. So in general, when I talk about these three things that give a movie a bad rating, profanity, sex, or nudity, and violence, I'm in general in favor of G-rated, you could say. So you could think, well, what you seem to be saying at first, that the rating doesn't matter at all, but then you turn around and say the rating does matter. So which is it? Does the rating matter, or does the rating not matter? Look, the rating means something, okay? The rating has some influence. There are certain things we want to avoid, but just because a work of fiction may not have those particular issues doesn't mean that the work of fiction is good or clean or particularly perfect, okay? So anyway, let me take what I'm trying to say and apply it to the central point of this podcast, the comparison between the movie Frozen and the movie Gran Torino. So let's look at Gran Torino first. First, let's talk about some things that are wrong with Gran Torino, and there are some things that people don't like about it. Some of these things didn't strike me right away. Other things did strike me right away. One of the things that struck me right away is that there's an awful lot of language in this movie, and I don't want to normalize language, right? So we know that when a protagonist uses something or does something repeatedly, people tend to think, well, that's normal, that's ordinary. It's one of the ways stories influence people. But in this case, right, I don't want people to think it's normal to use the kind of language that the character Clint Eastwood has and Gran Torino uses. I don't want people to do that. I don't do that myself. However, I'm not really drawn to that personally so much anyway. I wouldn't want to listen to it all the time. I wouldn't want to watch, you know, something just for fun because of the language. In this movie, though, I must say that the guy that uses the language, it's shown that he does it kind of habitually, that it's not so much that he is trying to be shocking. It's just the way he is, right? In fact, and it shows downsides to the way he is, that he is alienated from a number of people. He puts a lot of people off. Well, another downside is he uses racial slurs and really means them, at least sometimes. I don't think the character is as racist as he seems, but it's fair to call the character racist. In fact, that's actually, I will say it more in a minute, but that's one of the good things about the story. All right, what else is wrong? Well, he's kind of Mr. Toxic Masculinity, right? I don't mean to say that all masculinity is toxic or bad or being male is inherently bad, but it's bad to be so wrapped up in a masculine culture that you can't even tell somebody you love them, that he doesn't have a connection with his own sons. That's a problem, right? This character has a problem. And you could say that there's another problem with the story, that the story is too simplistic. I've read a critic say that. I don't think of it that way. I don't necessarily mind simple stories, but some people do. Yeah, it's a simple story. It makes it a good example, right? So I'm not worried about it being a simple story. But another issue with this is potentially that this is a white guy that saves some Asian people, right? So some people call that a white savior complex. And that kind of annoys me a little bit because some of the people that say this are upset when white people aren't helpful to minorities, but then they'll be upset, you know, if a white person is portrayed as doing something. But I get it. What they're talking about is agency. The Asian characters in the movie don't have as much agency as they should have. They aren't able to fend for themselves as much as maybe is better or more realistic. And so we could say that the message of Gran Torino is pointed, you know, at a white audience. It's directed that way. We could also say negatively that the movie portrays the Hmong culture in some bad ways or not realistic ways, even though it was the first movie to use Hmong, genuine ethnic Hmong actors. So it, in one way, was an advance, but in another way, it wasn't completely realistic. But what is the message this movie has pointed at its white audience? What's it trying to say? Well, first of all, one of the things that happens, if you haven't seen it, I'm going to presume that you know about it. If you don't, you can check it out. You can look up the Wikipedia. Same with Frozen, but these are commonly seen movies, so I assume you've seen them. But one of the things about this movie, Gran Torino, is that this guy that's a racist, who doesn't like his Asian neighbors, comes through a process of change. So he comes to like them. He comes to care about them. Well, that's a great message, I think, that he'd stop being a racist. He comes to literally love his neighbor as himself, which, wow, what a great message, a Christian message. In fact, he even loves his neighbor as himself to the point that he sacrifices his life for his neighbor. He winds up dying, and his death leads to the arrest of some gang members that were causing trouble for this young man that was a friend of his, right? His friend from next door, the young man. So he, by sacrificing his life, saves this other person's life. And that's a message about self-sacrificing love, what we might call as Christians agape love, or the love of Christ. In fact, the movie even points at the substitutionary atonement of Christ when the guy falls back, when he dies, Walt, the character, falls back with Clint, played by Clint Eastwood, with his hands spread wide like a cross. It's like being obvious. Hey, this is what he did. He died for his neighbor. He cared for his neighbor. He involved himself in the life of somebody else instead of just being a cynic, instead of just cussing, instead of just being racist. He did something. And that's a great message. I love that message. In fact, I would say in some ways that Gran Torino is a Christian film, even though it's got aspects I don't like or aspects that are troubling, not just to me, but to other people. All right, well, how does that compare to Frozen, right? So Frozen is a story that starts out with, you know, Anna and Elsa, right? Elsa is told by her parents that she has this issue that has to be suppressed. It's the power of, you know, to freeze things. But she has to, and they literally put her in long gloves and, you know, his coat and lock her away and everything. And eventually she gets to the point where she can't do it anymore, right? And she breaks free and sings the song for which the movie's famous, Let It Go. And then later on, Anna comes to find her and comes to her rescue. There's a terrible love interest that Hans, interested in Anna, and not a good guy at all. I think that him not being a good guy has a good message. I think we have to concede there are really good messages in Frozen, even though there's some parts I don't like. Like, the good message is, you know, love at first sight is a major thing in Disney films, in a great many Disney films. And if you talk to people who have been married, some of them really did experience love at first sight. It does happen. But is that actually normal, or does it happen all the time? Should we see it as normal? And has it ever happened that people thought they had love at first sight, but then they found out after a time they didn't? Well, those things have, you know, happened. It hasn't always turned out wonderfully. So there is that question, right? It's good that Disney's provided kind of a correction in Frozen, that the guy that Anna thought was wonderful at first sight really wasn't that wonderful. So I don't mind that message. I think I'm fine with them correcting, even though I think love at first sight can be a thing. And I think that there's a good message when Anna at the end sacrifices herself to save the life of her sister. That is an example of self-sacrificing love. In fact, we could say it's exactly the same as what, you know, Walt does in Gran Torino. He sacrifices himself. Except I would say it's not quite the same. Well, first of all, it's not quite the same because Anna doesn't really die. And second of all, it's not quite the same because she does it for a sister. And look, the truth is people are more likely to sacrifice themselves for people who are relatives. I mean, if we're talking biblically, that's a different kind of love than agape love, agape love is where you have self-sacrifice or a complete love for somebody when there's nothing that you can get out of it yourself. But love, when you have a relationship with somebody, when they're your friend, philos, that's really more what Anna and Elsa have, right? So she dies for her because she loves her, because she's her sister. Now, I'm not saying that that's, or attempts to die, because she doesn't actually die. So I would say that message is a little bit weaker than it is in Gran Torino. But nonetheless, it's still there, right? It's still there that there's self-sacrifice. But when we get to the central thing that kind of bothers me about Frozen, it's the thing that most people think of when they think of Frozen. They think of the song, Let It Go. That's a very famous song. It's on the mouths of little kids. They think about it. They think about that scene where Elsa gets out of her parents' imprisonments, takes off the gloves and the clothing that they gave her, and she basically rebels and says, no, I can't do this anymore, I have to let it go. All right, so I think that truthfully, there's going to be, what is the it that she let go? Could it be that someone thinks that relates to sensuality because she's taking off the gloves and dressing differently? Yeah, I think that is probably back there in the back of people's minds, subconsciously, or at least sometimes. Right, it's possible that somebody could watch that movie and never see that, but I think that kind of message does occur to a lot of people, because people do tend to think about sex, not when they're little kids, but later, when that song will have already been planted in their mind, in their subconscious, right? So that's a real thing, right? Let it go is, and the question is about letting it go. Is letting it go something that our culture really needs? Now, it's different if we're talking about the Victorians, you know, back in the Victorian days, even though I like a lot of things about Victorians and Victorian culture, we could say that the Victorians were suppressed in some ways. They didn't express emotion for one another necessarily always. They were some ways actually quite emotional, but there was a certain limit of expression of emotion at times among Victorians. So we could say maybe they need to learn to let it go. Okay, we could say that. And we could say that maybe let it go can have positive aspects. Maybe you have a sense of creativity that you're holding on to and not expressing. Okay, well, if that's true, maybe you need to let it go and just let it out. But overall, I would say our culture that we live in lets a lot of things go. It's routinely, habitually lets things go and doesn't hold things back. And look, especially from a Christian perspective, do we ever have to hold back on doing things we have an impulse to do? I mean, we should, according to the scripture, Galatians chapter 5, have a motivation within us to try to do the right thing. That is from the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit should guide us and give us a desire to do right from the inside, right? So we shouldn't have to be using our willpower to do right. But it might happen at times that you want to do the wrong thing and it crosses your mind. Should you just let it go just because that's what you feel like doing? And the Christian answer to that is no. I mean, certainly not. That it's more important to do right than it is to to do what you feel you must do to be fulfilled. And letting it go is about, in that movie, about doing what it takes to be fulfilled, whatever that should be. So I think that that is not a good message for our culture. And I also think that that is a message that could have potential problems. I'm about to quote C.S. Lewis on that. So in the Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis makes this really great quote that I like in this case. So it's Screwtape Letters is based on a correspondence between two imaginary demons giving advice about how to influence human beings. And one of the things that this one demon says to the other is this: the use of fashions in thought is to distract men from their real dangers. We direct the fashionable outcry of each generation against those vices of which it is in the least danger, and fix its approval on the virtue that is nearest the vice which we are trying to make endemic. The game is to have them all running around with fire extinguishers whenever there's a flood, and crowding to that side of the boat which is already nearly gone under. So what he's trying to say there is that it's definitely possible for people to be obsessed about the wrong thing, right? And I don't think our culture needs to be obsessed about letting it go. I think that's the opposite of what we need, mostly, right? So I think that overall, the message of that movie is subversive to good behavior and not a good thing. So, okay, so now that I said that, what do I mean? Do I mean, oh, well, gee, Travis, what's your idea about that? You think we ought to ban that now? You think we ought to, like, protest at Disney? I can't believe you did that. Can only did you do Frozen? You did Frozen 2, you know, something like that. No, I think that's a waste of time. First of all, those messages are too common. There's a lot of them in the world, and you can spend all your time protesting things. You can't really get anything done like that. And I'm also saying, even though there's something wrong with it, I'm not saying that you can't enjoy the movie. But you should be aware of what's bad about it. And especially if you have kids, you might want to have a conversation about letting it go. You might want to say, well, were Elsa's parents correct in locking her up? Well, maybe were there other options for them to do? And I would say probably there were, right? Were there other options, other things that they could have done to deal with this issue? And then you might get a certain answer. And then you might ask the question, well, what if the thing that she wanted to do was to hurt people? I mean, directly, that her desire was to murder people, or her desire was to steal from people. Are those things okay? Should she just let it go? I mean, there should be a conversation, I think, with children about, is letting it go in general a good principle, and make them aware of the fact that it isn't. And then you could try to link something positive to it and say, you know, but we do think you should let it go when you come to honesty, or when it comes to being good or being loving, you shouldn't hold back. Maybe we should say something like that, or being creative. Or alternatively, if you're talking to somebody, you know, who's not your own kid, maybe that you don't have as much freedom, you could just express the opinion that I like the part of the story where Anna sacrifices herself, but other parts of the story I don't like quite as much. And just leave it at that. In some cases, that might be appropriate. So I'm not trying to get us to overreact here and to storm the castle and, you know, set all copies of Frozen on fire. Nothing like that. Or on the other hand, nor am I trying to say that a movie like Gran Torino is perfect and doesn't have its problems. It does have its problems. But I think if I were to put these two movies in a comparison, I think when it comes to showing Christian virtues, I think Gran Torino, even though it's R-rated and has profanity, is a better movie than Frozen. People might be surprised that I think that way, when I overall am a supporter of clean fiction when possible. But I think that's the way that we ought to think in general. We ought to be aware of that. And we ought to go into every single type of story that we listen to or watch or read with an attitude that there might be something wrong there. Not that we get so upset that we no longer engage with it, but that we just confront in our own mind, or maybe in conversation with others, what we see as wrong. We let it know that, you know, if it's appropriate to do so, I mean, if it's helpful to others, that what we see is wrong. We talk about it, we openly discuss it, and then we, you know, deal with it. We disempower that thing. So the Bible says that a Christian ought to be able to endure hardship like a soldier of Christ. And that's in 2 Timothy 2, chapter 3, if you want to look that up. It also says that we are supposed to face the world by putting on the armor of God, which is Ephesians 6, 10 through 18. It also says we're to be alert and sober and vigilant in King James English, in 1 Peter 5, 8. All right. So what it's saying is, it's not that you can't enjoy life or there's nothing good in life. It's just saying you should be aware that there are negative influences. You should prepare yourself like a soldier putting on armor. You should have that mentality. The problem is to be caught by surprise. You don't want to be caught by surprise. That's why you want to be alert and vigilant. And some things need to be confronted, just like Jesus confronted some negative things people did. As much as, you know, Jesus didn't reject anyone for being too much of a sinner, he did confront negative behavior at times. And we need to do the same, including in our stories. So anyway, I would say overall, my summary statement, right, after all this talking and all this writing, is that we shouldn't judge a film by its rating as much as what message it contains, even though ratings still matter. And anyway, if you have any thoughts or comments about what I have to say, feel free to leave a comment, hit the like button, and if you can follow me on this podcast. And I thank you for your time. Bye.